I'm going to invite Catherine Jones up to present on Envision, which is a program I'm learning more about, and I'm looking forward to more of the details.
Thank you, Lanya, and welcome everybody back from lunch. I have the coveted post-lunch position in the conference, and I'm not talking about pickles or beer, so it'll be a little bit challenging to follow those two acts. But today I am going to talk about Envision, which is a rating structure for civil infrastructure. And just out of curiosity, show of hands, are you familiar with, have you heard of the Envision program? A few. And I think they're all consultants. which is great, which is really great. Envision is a relatively new program it's a rating system. It's more than that, but essentially it's a rating system for civil infrastructure projects. And it's relatively new. It's only been around for 4 or 5 years. Projects are just starting to roll into it. And I bet if I asked the same question 15 years ago about LEED, we would have had the same sort of response. People say Envision is, for civil infrastructure, kind of what LEED is for architecture. So today will be an introduction to many of you. Try to do 4 things today. One is give an overview of Envision, what it is, what it's trying to do, where it comes from. Go through in some detail, but not excruciating detail, what the Envision rating system is, what the credits system looks like. Talk specifically, because this is the groundwater audience, what are the water-related credits in Envision? And then I've got a couple project examples, so people who are really using it and how that evaluation is going. And Envision really is, it's designed to be a holistic evaluation of projects, and I know that there's a bunch of greenwashing out there, there's a bunch of people that are saying we're doing all the right things. It's really trying to be that system that looks at all aspects of the project, from the planning phases all the way through operation and even decommissioning. And it gets beyond what might be a more traditional evaluation of a project, beyond the environmental factors. It's looking at community input. It's looking at the longevity of management systems that are going to be there to uphold the sustainability of a project, and looking at climate and risk factors as well. So we'll start with an overview. Excuse me. It was developed kind of in response to the fact that there are a lot of different rating systems that are very sector-specific in the civil world. So there are transportation rating systems, there's site-specific rating systems, but there wasn't one system that everybody could use for a civil infrastructure project. And so several years ago, the program was born out of a collaboration between the Zofnis School of Design at Harvard University and the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure. And the ISI, or the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure, is the group. It's a nonprofit that really houses and runs the Envision program. And so through a collaboration with those two organizations, the Envision system was developed. And it wasn't developed outside of the actual engineering or infrastructure world. It is supported and was chartered, actually, with support from these three organizations, so Public Works Association, the American Society of Civil Engineers, and ACEC, which don't just throw their weight behind something if it's not actually going to make a difference in their world. So a well-supported organization and hopefully a very robust and credible system that was developed, and I believe it is. What makes Envision unique? So it applies to civil infrastructure, whereas LEED is, if you think about it, for vertical construction, for the habitat inside of a building, for energy and environmental design, for architecture, LEED is trying to do that for other types of horizontal infrastructure. So for anything that we build that the public uses, roadways, bridges, rails, even facilities, water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, that kind of thing. It includes all phases of a project. It can be used as a framework in the planning phases, and certainly through design to guide people through that design process and include as much as many sustainable elements as possible. It applies to many different parts of a project's life cycle. So like I mentioned, you can use it as a framework during planning, but it's also going to look at how things are set up all the way from the planning of a project through how is that project going to function in the real world. What are what do its operations look like, and all the way through decommissioning. So there are credits that will look at what do we do with the building when we're done with it? Is it recyclable? What can we do with the materials? And hopefully have that guide decision-making in what we put into the building, because we're already thinking about what we're going to do with it when we're done with it. Again, speaks to the bottom line, kind of the basic triple bottom line definition of sustainability, but really looks at social sustainability, economic sustainability, and environmental sustainability. And it's designed to keep pace with the changing concept of sustainability. So when we get into the credit system, you'll see that there are metrics used in each of the credits, and that those are designed to be able to change with how changing regulations or changing frameworks that we have. How does it help decision makers? So helps owners of utilities, owners of infrastructure make better decisions. And sometimes you'll hear people say when they hear about Envision, we try to do this, but we don't have a system. And this seems like the system where we can already fit in what we have as our principles or our goals. We can fit them into this program. And so this, it answers that need for a lot of utility owners. It evaluates environmental benefits of projects and helps guide decisions, hopefully, when owners are faced with making decisions about how to invest. Hopefully, this framework provides them with a way to evaluate different options and make the best investment for the long term of that infrastructure or that system. It really is strong on bringing in public participation and public input into the process. A lot of people who are using the system have adopted it simply because of that fact, that it does a great job of bringing people into the conversation early so that the infrastructure project fits well within communities' goals. Looks at costs and benefits. Because it's so metrics-based, it causes you to evaluate things from a cost-benefit perspective. Think about what might not cost you a lot now, but what might cost you in the future. And the tagline that goes along with Envision is maybe not to ask, am I doing the project in the right way, but am I even doing the right project? Is this even the best fit for the need that we have? So how does it improve sustainability? Got these three axes here. And if you think about the way that maybe traditional projects are done, they kind of sit at the point where those three meet. And Envision tries to drive projects to include more communities, more stakeholders, more groups in all phases of the project. So driving it out to extend project boundaries. It looks at the usefulness of the project. So not only looking at what is it going to take to design and build this thing, but what about operations? What about the full life cycle of the project? And then, and we'll get into what these words actually mean within the system, but baseline in Envision is business as usual. So that gets you 0 points in the rating system. You have to be actually doing better than business as usual, better than just meeting regulations or standards, to do either an improved, superior, or restorative performance. So really driving things beyond that basic, more traditional approach. Where does Envision apply? Again, it's all public infrastructure, pretty much anything that we build for the public to use. So it's roadways, it's bridges, rails, ports, water treatment plants, wastewater treatment facilities. And there's even a couple power generation facilities that are using it now, which I'll talk about at the end for project examples. It's growing. Like I said, it's been around for maybe 5 years, and cities and utilities infrastructure owners are starting to pick it up, and they're starting to look at it and use it in their systems. So here's a list. There's a handful of cities that are using it, some public agencies that have adopted it. It's showing up in some RFPs. It's showing up in some criteria for project design, and some federal agencies who are considering or are looking at Envision as a framework, Department of Energy, Corps of Engineers, so some big players in the infrastructure game. Talk in more detail about how the system works. There are 60 credits in the Envision rating system, and they're broken down into 5 categories. So these are across the top, broad categories: quality of life, leadership, resource allocation, the natural world, and climate and risk. And there aren't the same number of credits in each category. They're broken into some subgroups within each category. We'll take a look at in a little bit of detail. at what's in each. So quality of life is really looking at how does the project fit within the community where it's to be built, where it's to be in operation. Three subcategories here, the purpose, the well-being of the community, and the surrounding community, how it really fits in. So it's looking at things like, does this mesh with community development plans? Is this in line with how a city plans to develop? Looking at, does it stimulate sustainable growth and development? Does it develop local skills and capabilities? So even looking at, will this facility employ local people? Will it build upon existing economy and skills? The well-being, looking at how the project is going to impact the people who live around, work around, or are where the project will fit in. So noise pollution, light pollution. It looks at mobility and access. It looks at proximity to transit options. So really, again, trying to take a look at how that, from a holistic stance, does this project fit in and how does it improve the community where it's to sit? And then there are credits that look at, does it preserve historic and cultural resources, views and local character? Does it enhance public space? So again, really trying to focus in on how does this particular project fit within the community where it will operate, where it will be built. And you'll notice at the bottom, and this is true of every category, there's that zero credit, which is exceed. In the rating system, if there is an area where your project will go beyond in one of the particular credits, you can apply for kind of some bonus points. So you can demonstrate that this is really a paradigm shift for this sort of operation. This is going to expand. This will be a model and be able to expand this kind of operation, not just for this facility, but for other facilities. So really being a model. Anywhere that you can demonstrate that you're going above and beyond the limits of your project, there are some extra points. So you'll see that on all the slides. Leadership is the second category, and this tries to get at, are there systems in place to support the long-term sustainability of the project, and how did the project come about? So was it planned in a sustainable way? Did it get a lot of community involvement? Was that involvement really incorporated into the project design? Are there management systems in place to support sustainability? It's not just something we're going to do and say we're done with, but you've got to have monitoring systems. You've got to have a management system that's committed to this program or to this framework. And then again, the planning. So looking at the long term, have you looked at extending the useful life? Have you looked at regulations, and are you kind of pushing maybe to see that addressing conflicting regulations and policies is looking at, can we do something in a different way that can demonstrate success? Resource allocation really gets into what materials are we putting into a project. Three subcategories here, the materials, the energy, and the water. So more traditional kind of evaluation of how we're building a project. Looking at the net embodied energy of materials going into a construction project. Looking at sustainable procurement practices, using recycled materials where appropriate, regional materials, regionally sourced materials, where that's possible. Reducing the amount of waste from a construction site or from project operations that go to landfill or from decommissioning that would go to landfill. Can we reduce excavated materials taken off site? And then again, looking at the deconstruction recycling materials at the end of the project's useful life. Energy, looking kind of at traditional reducing energy consumption and conservation. Can we use renewables? And then are systems properly put in place and started up and then maintained so that we may put in a fabulous system at the head of the project, but if it's not maintained, it's not going to perform. So is it properly commissioned and monitored throughout the project life? And then looking at water and project's impact on water, are we protecting freshwater availability? Not just for this use, but for others who are using the same resources. Reducing potable water consumption. Are we properly monitoring water systems? So are we doing leak detection? Are we doing proper metering to make sure that our systems are operating as planned? Natural world, probably pretty familiar criteria here for environmental evaluation of projects. Looking at site conditions and siting. Are we avoiding prime farmland? Can we develop a brown field or a gray field instead of a green field? Are we looking at floodplain? Are we building the floodplain? Is that avoidable? And if we have to do so, can we maintain the floodplain function? Avoiding unsuitable development on steep slopes. Adverse geology is in there as well. Karst, very familiar to you, that's specifically mentioned in the criteria. Looking at land and water interface, how are we managing stormwater? Can we reduce pesticide use to protect water quality and surface and groundwater contamination? And I'll get into the water-related credits in more detail, too. And then biodiversity, looking at species, biodiversity, invasive species, habitat, restoring disturbed soils, and maintaining wetland and surface water functions. And then the fifth category is climate and risk. And this has two subcategories. One is to look at greenhouse gas emissions specifically from the project, as well as from project operations and construction and operations. And then look at also criteria air pollutants. And then a subcategory also on resiliency. And so have the project designers or the planners assessed the climate change and the potential impacts to the project area from climate change? Avoiding traps and vulnerabilities, which means are we building something into the project that may not be available in the future because of climate change? So are we building something that's going to need to be fueled by fossil fuels that 50 years from now when we're still running may not be available or may not be affordable? Preparing for long-term adaptability, so that's looking at resiliency issues associated with climate change. Short-term adaptability, more associated with short-term hazards, flood being one of them. And then managing heat island effects. So what are we doing with the site design to really to not contribute to the heat island effect? So that's kind of a quick rundown of the five categories and 60 credits. There is a manual that goes along that provides a lot of detail on each of the credits and how they're measured. And I have a sample credit, which I think will help explain that metric system. If you're going through the project, it's similar to LEED. There's a rating that goes along with everything, and there are five levels of achievement associated with each credit, from improved all the way up to restorative. And like I said in the beginning, the improved assumes that you're doing better than standard or business as usual performance. And so even to get any of the points in the system, you have to be demonstrating that you're going beyond the traditional approach. Some of these definitions, in my opinion, are a little bit fuzzy, but you move up the scale through enhanced, superior, conserving, and restorative. And there are specific metrics with each credit on how you get to each of those levels of performance and what points are associated with those. And the restorative really is getting the site or any credit doing more than, doing better than even how you found the site, doing better with your materials than normal. So getting really beyond even a conservation approach. Here's that sample credit I was talking about. I pulled one of the water ones. Each credit has an intent, which summarizes what the credit is trying to get at, and then has, for each of the five levels of achievement, very detailed information on what you need to do to meet those levels. So there's a description, and then at the end of each, there's an A, B, C, D, E kind of thing. And those are defined also with the credit. And so a project planner can read through, or a project owner can read through and understand what's associated, what metric, how am I going to be measured to get to each of those levels of achievement. The metric is also summarized. So for this one, protecting freshwater availability, the intent is to reduce the negative net impact on freshwater availability, quantity, and quality. That's what we're trying to do. How am I going to be measured? The metric is the extent to which the project uses freshwater resources without replenishing those resources at their source. So, and it's the criteria and how that's measured is detailed in the language associated with each credit. So it's a little hard to read in this at this scale, but the system is built on a series of metrics. And so it's not something that you can say, I'm doing this without having to document, without having to show that you really are doing this, that you really are meeting these things. So there are strong requirements with each metric or with each level of improvement. So if a project is going to go through the verification process or the envision process, you first register a project with the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure. That project is then assessed, so you provide all the documentation that goes with each of the credits, and it's assessed. And this is one of the other things that I think is a strong part of the Envision program, is that projects are assessed by a third-party verifier. So your project and all your documentation goes to somebody else who's knowledgeable and trained and is a specialist in each of the credit areas. And your documentation is reviewed against the criteria, and it's either accepted or not accepted. And there's a negotiation period that can happen. And so it's not something where you can just say, as a PR function, I'm doing this and I'm doing a good job. Someone else who's trained in the system is going to be looking at it and grading you, in fact, and saying you are or you aren't. And so you're being held to a high standard, which I think gives a lot of credibility to the system. After going through that, there's a number of points. You know, your points are tallied. The percentage is determined on how many points you could achieve, how many you did achieve. That percentage is figured, and then you're awarded if you qualify, similar to LEED, a bronze through platinum rating. So as promised, I'll pull out the water-related credits in Envision. We'll just look at them quickly. It's a lot of a lot of words. But just so for this audience to know how water is being treated in Envision. So there are a handful of credits that are really specific to water, and they fall in that resource allocation category and the natural world category. We'll look at those in detail. So I've listed the intent and the metrics. So protecting freshwater availability, reducing the negative net impact on freshwater availability, quantity and quality. And so the metric is the extent to which, we covered this one, the extent to which you're using and replenishing those resources at their source. And again, the metrics here provide a lot more detail. Reducing potable water consumption. So looking at, can you reduce how much water you're using from potable water system? Are there alternatives that you could use? Can you do gray water, recycled water? Can you use storm water to meet some of your needs? And then the metrics define if you're reducing by 25%, 50%, 75%, according to industry standards. How are you doing against the industry standard? Monitoring water systems. Again, we talked about leak detection. What are you doing to monitor your water system performance? And then that has to be documented. So do you have metering? Is your metering set up in an appropriate way that you can really track water loss in your system? What are you going to do with the water loss information or the metering information that you collect? Are you going to collect it and analyze it? Do you have a program in place to make sure that the system is operating as planned? Protecting wetlands and surface water. So the intent here is to provide enough buffer and restore areas around wetlands, shorelines, and water bodies. And there's the metrics include a separation distance and how much buffer you're providing for each of those water features. Avoiding adverse geology here can apply to earthquake faults, or it can apply to karst. They're both covered in this credit. And so to the extent that you can avoid, if you have a choice, you know, I think this morning about talking about the Surly Brewery, they had a choice of 80 sites that they could pick, and they had criteria that they used, water being a really important one. But if you have a choice like that and you can avoid sensitive geology, you get points for that. Now, if you can't avoid it, but you can mitigate it, you get points for that as well. So, again, just how that's considered in the system, where you choose to locate does matter and how you adapt to that situation. Preserving floodplain function. Again, there are some facilities you can't avoid. You can't have a bridge that doesn't actually impact the floodplain. A lot of wastewater treatment plants have to be located, or it's most cost-effective to be located in those low areas. But to what extent are you preserving the function of the floodplain if you have to be there? How are you managing stormwater on your site? Can you minimize the impact? This gets into a lot of LID design considerations within the metrics. And reducing pesticide and fertilizer impacts. So using native species that don't require a lot of fertilizer, that don't require a lot of water, you'd get credit there too. And can you use pest control rather than using pesticides. So, again, aimed at protecting water quality. Preventing surface and groundwater contamination. So do you have practices set up? Do you have facilities designed in such a way to minimize runoff to either groundwater or surface water or infiltration to groundwater? And then maintaining wetland and surface water functions. So maintain and restore the ecosystem functions of streams, wetland, and water bodies. There are four functions. They're defined within the Envision credits, and then you are judged against how many of those things you are actually maintaining, those functions. Hydrologic connection, water quality, habitat, and sediment transport function. There's a handful of other credits in the system that could be water-related, depending on your project, depending on your site. And so those fall in the quality of life category and leadership, and then the climate and risk. So preserving historic and cultural resources, certainly if you're around a water feature that's considered a cultural or historic feature, you could be evaluated in this regard. Views and local character, especially like building along the river, a scenic riverway. Enhancing public space, so if that public space is somehow involves water, this could certainly apply. In leadership, improving infrastructure integration, so that's really trying to get at, are you looking at not just what this project is intended to do, but what else is going on, and are we coordinating those things, not just from a planning perspective, but how those are going to operate, and so there may be some overlap there with a water-related use. Assessing climate threat, in this area, of course, we're looking at timing and intensity of storms. Avoiding traps and vulnerabilities, I talked about building things into your project that are going to be either unaffordable or unavailable in the future that could have a water-related impact. Preparing, again, long-term adaptability to climate change, so are we sizing infrastructure in the right way that's actually looking at our changing precipitation patterns. And short-term hazards, floods may be one that we want to plan and design around. So an overview of projects that are going through the system right now, or have gone through the system that are verified. There are six verified projects. And Envision is targeted really at a North American audience. So there are five projects that have been verified in the U.S., one in Canada, which is relatively recent. Not to say that this system couldn't be applied in other parts of the world. There's some European interest in it. Some people have taken the training from Europe, but primarily an American system. So there's the first project that was verified is a fish hatchery in Anchorage, Alaska. There's two projects that are related in California, related to wetland and infiltration. There's a pipeline project in Texas, a stream restoration project in Northern California, and then the first Canadian project is the Grand Bend Area Wastewater Treatment Facility in Lake Huron. So again, running kind of across all categories there, we've got some pipeline, a lot of water-related projects, wetland projects, stream restoration projects, fish hatchery, water-related project. But a couple of facilities, the pipeline, and some more natural area projects. Like LEED, I think people will take Envision and they may decide to go the full run with it. We're going to register our project, we're going to go through the rating system, and try to get a certified project. Others may use the framework and just use it as a planning tool to help force them to evaluate things that they might not have otherwise considered. Can we be doing things in a more sustainable way? What are the criteria that the system would use, and how might those apply to me, without the intent of really going forward through the whole evaluation and certification phase? And so there are over 350 projects right now that are using the Envision framework. And so they're looking at it. They might register, they might not. They might just use the framework again to try to help shape their project or drive them towards more sustainable decisions about what they're planning on doing. And again, these run across all areas of civil infrastructure, water and wastewater treatment, natural gas plants, pipeline, brownfield restorations, rail projects, highway projects, roadway projects. So a couple of specific examples, that fish hatchery up in Alaska was the first project to become certified in Envision a couple years ago, awarded in July 2013. So it was really the Department of Fish and Game in Alaska that they had these were their principles anyway. They wanted to do a better job in replacing, they had some aging fish hatcheries that needed to be replaced or rehabbed. And the ones that they had to replace, they really wanted to do so in a more sustainable way. They wanted to do the right thing. Kind of like the message we heard this morning from Gedney. We want to do the right thing. So they set out planning this project and as a result made some really good sustainable decisions in how they cited their project, what kinds of public input they got, what kind of public education facilities they provide with the hatchery, how they approach water, how they approach their site. So here's a quick rundown of some of the highlights from the five different credit areas. So again, there was a lot of public involvement into where the project would go, what it would look like, what it would incorporate. Leadership, again, a lot of public education and outreach. They repurposed stuff when they could, so they had a pump station. They reused it. If there was infrastructure that was still in good shape, they reused it, and that was a management decision, not to just build new, but to reuse what they could. The real highlight from this project is they have reduced their energy and water consumption by putting in a state-of-the-art water recycling program. So as you can imagine, hatchery operations are very water-intensive. They're using recycling, which not only cuts down on the amount of groundwater that they're pumping. City of Anchorage also uses the same aquifer for their wells, so it's protecting that source for the city. But there's also some energy benefits for them, too. They have less temperature control to do if they're recycling the water. It's already been through the process once. So not only water savings, but energy savings as well. It was a brownfield and partly a grayfield site, cleaning up contamination. The site is designed with native plants. I think we covered most of these. Oh, using recycled materials in the construction as much as possible. And the other one, because there is that cloud computing piece in our title, and Lanya had asked about power, there are a couple of projects that the company I work for is working with right now that are power generation facilities that are using Envision. And one is in Holland, Michigan. It's the Holland Board of Public Utilities. It's a publicly owned utility, and they have chosen to use Envision for that reason that I said. They want to do the right thing. They want to have a more sustainable operation. And so they're currently, I think they broke ground in their facility yesterday, so that's exciting. And they are a natural gas combined cycle plant, and they're doing a lot of things on their site that wouldn't traditionally fit into what we would consider for kind of normal planning and design for power generation facilities. They're doing stormwater recycling where they can. They're building renewables into their operations. And they're trying to make this as much of a public amenity as they can. So they're trying to incorporate it into the community in a way that visually matches with the community. They're building in pathways and park-like features so that the facility doesn't just kind of stand out as this big industrial facility. They've looked at some water-saving features, recycling some water, using some water as makeup water in their cooling towers to reduce demands on freshwater sources, restoring wetlands on site as well. The other project, I don't have a slide for it because it's relatively new, Wisconsin Power and Light has a new project that they're just citing and just getting going on. And that's also, they're using that framework, the Envision framework, to help guide them in decision making about site selection, about processes, and helping that project along in a way that hopefully makes it more socially sustainable, environmentally sustainable, and economically sustainable. The difference there, of course, someone brought up costs earlier, which is a great question. We've got publicly owned infrastructure, their rates aren't necessarily regulated by utility, where you've got an investor-owned utility whose rates are regulated. So cost does factor into decision-making, but I think in both of these cases, there are things that have been considered that wouldn't traditionally be considered if it weren't for the framework. So going through each credit by credit, if you're starting a project and looking at whether Envision will apply, you would look at the entire credit system and go through it, spend an entire day with a team of people and take a look at each of the credits. How are we doing on this? Do we want to try to do better? And in that question of do we want to try to do better is where you get people thinking more about what else can we do. And so in that way, I think Envision can be kind of a game changer for the traditional way of doing things and force us to start looking at things in a new way and hopefully a better way to make our projects more sustainable in the long run. Best place to get more information is from the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure, sustainableinfrastructure.org, the ISI, which is that agency that houses the program. And there are a number of people in the state who've gone through the training program, mostly a lot of consultants, I think some agency people as well. There's a list on the ISI website. You can find registered professionals who've gone through the credentialing program, which would also be good sources of information on the program. So it's rolling out. It's relatively new. You know, a handful of projects have gone through the certification process, but I think you'll hear more about it. And I bet in 5 years, if I asked the same question, I'd have more people say, yeah, we've heard of it, or my city's using it on a project. That's the hope anyway.
I'm going to take, we're running a little close, but time for one question, two questions. I know this is the after lunch, and so I did put Cabby on the spot, and I appreciate her generosity. Oh. We have one here and one here. Oh. We have a deferred question.
I'll ask first. Who cooked this up, this whole scheme? I didn't get that.
Way back to the beginning, it was a collaboration between the Zofnet School of Design at Harvard University and the Institute for Sustainable Infrastructure. And then, again, supported by those three organizations, Public Works Association, ACEC, and ASCE, as well as several design firms who have signed on to support the conversations between ISI and people using the program are many and open. It's, in my mind, a good collaboration. And I think it was meant to fit a need that people didn't see was there. Is there something, is there a way that we can promote better practices in our projects?
Cabby, I'm curious. It seems like in a pipeline project, there'd be a lot of things that would just not even apply, and so it'd be really difficult for something like that to even score very high.
Yeah, really good point. So if there are credits that don't even apply to what you're doing, those aren't counted against you. So you do need to justify in the system that credit doesn't apply to me. You have to provide documentation to show that doesn't apply, and then that's not counted in your score. So your percentage is based on the number of available points or points that really apply to you and how many of those you got, not based on the total number of points in the system. So there are some credits that may fall out depending on your project.
I appreciated her speaking specifically about some of these projects because I brought up the topic of power for the very specific reason that, particularly here in Minnesota, power is, we rely on surface water, right, for our cooling plants and our power. So it's very interesting to me that we need surface water to use groundwater. And so there's a very interesting combination as you start to think about sustainable management of water utilities and power utilities, kind of that as we think about sustainable management of groundwater and its place in the bigger picture. So thank you for addressing that.